Does God have plans to use your life for His glory? You can be sure that He does. Here's Skip Heitzig.
God never wastes a life. And when a life is dedicated to Him, a life is converted, when you say, Lord, I give you my life, God takes you up on His word. And He molds you and shapes you, but He'll make sure that your life, once given to Him, is never wasted. You may never see dramatic, overt, miraculous, visible things happen, but God can strategically move you for His kingdom's sake, as we'll see tonight in this book.
Make the connection.
Back in 2007, a 50-year-old New York construction worker saw a man collapse and fall onto the subway tracks as a train approached. In an instant, he jumped onto the tracks and pressed the other man down between the tracks as the train passed overhead. Both men survived with only a few bumps and bruises as a result of their adventure. You might say that that construction worker was in the right place at the right time to save that man's life. Well, today in The Connection, we'll hear a story of someone else who was in the right place at the right time, not to just save one person, but an entire race of people. We'll get to today's study in just a moment. But first, if you'd like to know what's happening in the scientific world when it comes to explaining the origin of the universe, you may want to invest in this month's resource.
Evolution or creation? God's plan or merely an accident? Is man an organized orangutan or the image of God himself? These questions have been the subject of scrutiny and debate for centuries. This month at The Connection, we want to shed some light on the contentious and confusing issues of our origins with the documentary Expelled on DVD and a new lifestyles booklet from Skip Heitzig called In the Beginning. Discover just how resistant the academic and scientific community is to any theory other than evolution in the documentary Expelled, hosted by comedian Ben Stein.
All along I've been well aware that other people, very smart people, believe otherwise. Rather than God's handiwork, they see the universe as the product of random particle collisions and chemical reactions. And rather than regard humankind as carrying the spark of the divine, they believe we're nothing more than mud animated by lightning.
Then, read about the biblical account of creation and how there's scientific evidence to back it up in Skip's booklet, In the Beginning. Order both resources for just $25 when you call 1-800-922-1888 or when you visit connectionradio.org. As the debate over the origins continues, get some solid information so you can better discern fact from fiction. Order the DVD documentary Expelled and Skip's new lifestyles booklet In the Beginning when you call 1-800-922-1888.
Well, we'd sure encourage you to check out that resource package at our website, connectionradio.org, or you can always write us here at The Connection. That's P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. You never know when you might be needed. What may seem like a mundane circumstance to you may be just the circumstance God planned in order to use you to make a difference. And that's exactly what happened with a young woman named Esther. And we'll learn more about her in just a moment.
And make the
open your Bibles to the book of Esther, and let's join Skip Heitzig as he begins with a little background.
The book of Esther, one of only two books in the entire Bible named after a woman. The other is the book of Ruth. Esther, in the Persian language, which is interestingly similar to Spanish, means star, estrella. How many of you knew that already? Yeah, I found that out a few years ago. Estrella, star, Esther, star in Persian. That is her name. Her Hebrew name, as we'll see, is Hadassah. which means something entirely different. It means a myrtle tree, but she is given a Persian name in this book. There's a question a lot of people live with as they go through life. Questions like, why do I have this crummy job? What is the purpose of life? Getting up, going to work, I work cutting hair, or I work as an engineer, or I work in an office, or I work doing law. What great purpose is there in that? How could God use that? I hope that Esther will answer that question once and for all, because we see somebody who was just another Jewish girl in an empire being placed strategically by God to be, as we heard even earlier, in the right place at the right time. God never wastes a life. And when a life is dedicated to Him, a life is converted, when you say, Lord, I give you my life, God takes you up on His word. And He molds you and shapes you, but He'll make sure that your life, once given to Him, is never wasted. You may never see dramatic, overt, miraculous, visible things happen, but God can strategically move you for His kingdom's sake, as we'll see tonight in this book. The book of Esther is part of a little section of Hebrew literature called, and if you have a pen, I'll spell it, Megillot. Megillot. It looks like Megalos. M-E-G-G-I-L-O-T-H. Megillot. And it means the five scrolls. These are five little books or scrolls in the original that are of special importance to the Jewish nation. In fact, on five different occasions throughout the year, the Jews will read one of these books. So every year at Passover, the book, The Song of Solomon, is read. Every year at Pentecost, the book of Ruth is read and recited in the synagogue. The book of Lamentations is read once a year on a very special date called Tish B'Av, which is the celebration annually, or the commemoration of the destruction of the Jewish temple. Every Feast of Tabernacles, the book of Ecclesiastes is read. And this book, the fifth book, the book of Esther, is read at a feast called Purim. Purim. How many of you have heard of that feast, Purim? Okay, hands down. I'm going to ask you just to get real honest. How many of you have never heard of that feast before, Purim? Okay, great. A lot of you, hands down. We're going to change that tonight. The introduction and the explanation of that feast is found in this book. In fact, at the very end of the book, it will explain how that feast came about. Without this book, we would have absolutely no idea what the captives who stayed back and didn't go to Jerusalem under Ezra, Zerubbabel, and Nehemiah, we wouldn't have known what life was like for them. But now in reading this book, we have a little snapshot of life in Persia, in the Persian court especially. We don't know who wrote the book of Esther. We can only guess. There's three good guesses. I would say it's either Mordecai, a relative of hers who's mentioned in the book, Ezra, or Nehemiah. Simply because whoever wrote it had to be Jewish, because there's a lot of references to Jewish dates in the calendar, the Hebrew calendar, and had to have knowledge of the Persian court. And Nehemiah and Mordecai had intimate knowledge of that. So I would say one of those two, in my opinion, wrote this book. Esther is a book of crisis. The book unfolds a crisis and the resolution of that crisis. And what's great about that to me is that God isn't just the God of calm. Oh, God's in this. It's all calm and peaceful. As if to say, it's a crisis. God can't be in this. And I often hear people say, God's not a God of confusion. I know He's not the author of confusion, but understand, God can hop right in the middle of your crisis and confusion and give you peace, even though you don't see it outwardly. There's still moorings and bearings and a great sense of peace and calm in the midst of a crisis. Interesting thing about this book, as we mentioned this last weekend, is the name of God is not mentioned in this book, not even once. Although the pagan king is mentioned 192 times in this book. Prayer is never mentioned in this book. Obviously, if God isn't mentioned, nobody's praying to him. And so it has a book that has puzzled people. Martin Luther even said he wished this book never would have been written. He really had problems with this at first. But to me, that's what makes it so special. Because you don't have to have the name of God, but as Nate even said earlier on, you have the thumbprint or the fingerprint, the evidence of the working of God. One of the reasons you don't see God in this book is because we're dealing with Israel in their backslidden state. They're not really thinking about God. They're not obeying God in Persia. Remember, they didn't go back. Only 50,000 went back. The rest of them stayed back in Babylon and now taken over by Persia. So they're not interested in furthering the kingdom. They're not interested in Jerusalem. They're not interested in God's program. They have largely stayed back and forgotten all about God and become very much like the world around them. But here's the beauty of the book. Though they may have forgotten about God, God hasn't forgotten about them. And this is where providence comes in. If you've never thought about that word or that concept, I want you really to get that message tonight. This book shows the providence of God, how God moves ordinary events and strings them together just perfectly so that his will ultimately be done. And I think God moves that way most of the times that God is moving. There's a lot of different ways God has acted in the past. As it says in Hebrews 1, verse 1, God who at sundry times and in diverse manners spoke in times past to our fathers through the prophets. For example, number one, appearance. God made the heaven and the earth appear out of nothing. He just made it happen. And then to Adam and Eve, God appeared. It says God walked with them in the cool of the day. And then throughout biblical history, you have certain times where God will speak to his people, speak to a prophet, or have an apparition of sorts. That's very rare. That is not a common everyday occurrence. Second way God moves is an appearance, but maintenance. He maintains what he created. In Colossians chapter 1, he, Jesus, is before all things, and in him all things are held together. He's the super glue that keeps everything running like clockwork in this universe. So appearance, maintenance. Here's a third way God works historically, interference. Sometimes God will decide, and it is rare, but he'll do it. And throughout the Bible, he did it a lot. Interference. God will interrupt or supersede natural law with a miraculous event. But fourth, and this is what brings us to Esther, this is by and large how God moves most of the time, is by providence. Not appearance, maintenance all the time, not always by interference, but providence. See, here we are going, God, show me a miracle. And God doesn't have to do the miracle. He can if he chooses to. But by and large, he just takes natural events and puts them together in such a way that his will ultimately be done. John Nelson Darby put it this way. God's ways are behind the scenes, but he moves all of the scenes which he is behind. See, God isn't always overt, always visible, always audible. Jesus said the kingdom of God does not come with outward observation. But he's all over this book providentially. Now, a quick outline, and we're going to be reading probably more in the front and summing up more in the back, but there's only 10 chapters, no problem, we'll cover it. Chapters 1 and 2 form a unit. Chapters 3, 4, and 5 form a second unit, and the rest of the book is the third division. So first of all, we have supernatural providence, and I'll explain more as we go. Supernatural providence. God's going to set things up. Have you ever walked into a situation and say, this is a setup? That's what God does. It's a setup. Supernatural providence. Chapters 3, 4, and 5, division number 2, satanic plot. We see a counter move, like a chess game. In fact, I believe Satan thought he was saying check to God. Of course, you'll see how God does a checkmate. And after the satanic plot, the third division, the rest of the book is sovereign protection. Sovereign protection, how God protects the Jewish people. So let's go to chapter 1, verse 1, supernatural providence. It came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus. This was the Ahasuerus who reigned over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia. So if you're wondering, well, I wonder which Ahasuerus he means, that's the one. That guy. He was the ruler over the empire. Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, his Greek name, will be the father of Artaxerxes, the guy who gives the command to Nehemiah to go back. The border of the empire on the east, India. The border of the empire on the west, Ethiopia, at that time. In those days, when King Ahasuerus, by the way, it means mighty. His name means mighty or lion. So this is the first lion king. This is the lion king. This is Ahasuerus, the lion king. He sat on the throne of his kingdom, which was in Shushan, the citadel. That in the third year of his reign, he made a feast for all of his officials and servants, the powers of Persia and Media, the nobles, the princes of the provinces, being before him. When he showed the riches of his glorious kingdom and the splendor of his excellent majesty for many days. Yeah, I would say 180 days in all. All I can say is this guy knew how to party. This is a 6-month party, a 6-month festival. And here's why he's doing it. We know historically. He's trying to sell these guys on a war plan. He's getting 127 provinces, all the leaders. We don't know how many from each province. There could have been 2,000 people in his banquet hall. And for 6 months, he's getting them together. He's wining them. He's dining them. And he's trying to sell them on a war plan. And here's why. Over in the West at that time, a new empire is gaining strength. It's called Greece. Philip of Macedon and his son, Alexander, who thought he was really great, and he was, is starting to gain power and influence and will eventually take over the world. So what we're seeing here already is providence. There's going to be a power shift in the world, a power shift from the east to the west. Right now, the east, Persia, they're in charge. Pretty soon, Alexander the Great will conquer the world, and there will be a great power shift from east to west. The Greeks will build roads. The Romans will expand them. By the New Testament time, the whole world will speak the most exact language ever produced, the Greek language, so that the New Testament will be given to us in Greek. It's all a perfect setup for the coming of the Messiah. I did a whole study on this in Galatians chapter 4, verse 4. And when the fullness of the time had come, or it was just the perfect time, God sent forth his son, born of a virgin, born under the law. So God is starting here to set up the players for not just what is imminent, but what is ultimate in the future. In verses 5 and following, after the 6-month party, he throws party number 2. This is a 7-day feast, thanking all of his palace officials for all of their help on the first party. I mean, I'm telling you, this guy is just like Mr. Party Animal, party hardy dude all the way. Well, we're done with that party. Let's have a party for the people who threw the party. It was much smaller. Verse 9, Queen Vashti, that's his wife, also made a feast for the women in the royal palace, which belonged to King Ahasuerus. Now, according to social custom, men and women did it separately. There were separate gatherings. A few years ago, I was in Thailand. I didn't know protocol. It was at a leaders' conference. We were in northern Thailand. We were out in the fields. I'm used to pulling out a chair for a woman to sit down. The women, you serve first, and then the men sit. Oh, no, not there. The men eat first and are served by the women and the younger folks, and I'm sitting around, and I invite some of the young folks and some of the women to have a seat next to me and next to us, and boy, did I get in trouble for that. It's just a very different protocol. Well, that's how Persia was run. Separate, different events going on. Verse 12. But Vashti refused to come at the king's command, brought by his eunuchs. Therefore, the king was furious and his anger burned with him. The men are having a feast, feast number 2. The women are having a feast. The king says, I want to show you my beautiful trophy wife. Wait till you get a load of her. Calls for Queen Vashti. Now, we don't exactly know why she refuses to come. Possibility number one, the king wanted her to perform some lewd, sensual act. She refused to do it. Or number two, she was pregnant at the time with little Xerxes, Artaxerxes, and she didn't want to go. She refused to go. Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command. It says, notice at the end of verse 12, his anger burned within him. History tells us this guy had an anger problem. First of all, he's the king, so he can get angry whenever he feels like it, right? Who's going to say, don't do that? But he really flew off the handle. There's a story in history that says he had 300 men of Persia build a bridge somewhere down by the Persian Gulf. A huge storm came in and destroyed the bridge that the 300 men had built. He flew into a rage, went out to the water and started beating the water. I don't know why, but he's king. He can beat water whenever he wants. So he's hitting the water. Then he goes and kills the 300 men who built him the bridge because it wasn't good enough. Just crazy, you know, kind of out there. And so when it says he became angry, it's like, uh-oh, king's mad. What do we do? Now, Ahasuerus had never faced this before. He had never faced feminism in the Persian Empire. He'd never had his wife or anybody say, no, I'm not going to do that. And he doesn't exactly know what to do. So he calls in a few of the wise guys, and one of them who's named here, Memucan, says, this is what you got to do. You got to put an end to this right now. You got to take her, kick her off the throne, get her out of the palace, and put out an edict throughout all of the empire that says, women don't do that to their husbands. We have to set order here.
Well, you never know when God may need you to complete a task for the kingdom. So the best thing to do is always just be prepared. Maybe you'll need to jump on the tracks to save a life, or maybe you'll need to help save a nation. No matter what it might be, one thing you can be sure of is that God is going to use you sometime, somehow, in some way. And that's all the time we have for today. But before we go, we'd like to invite you to be a part of our efforts to share the gospel all over the world. Here's more information on how you can do that as a global connector.
Statistics can be confusing, and numbers can be numbing. But let's pause and consider these two numbers. 6.7 billion people on Earth. And 41% of them are in people groups unreached by the gospel. Now put the Great Commission of Jesus Christ in the equation and we face a decision. Make this the prime directive of our lives or miss out on being part of exploding global evangelism. At The Connection, we broadcast these daily teachings nationwide, but we also air them in Central America and the South Pacific, Africa, and other international stations. But we'd like to do more, a lot more. That's where you can come in. We want to add new cities in England, Russia, and Mexico to our broadcast outreach. And we want to invite you to be a part of it by becoming a global connector. If you'd like to be a part of this expansion, you can support The Connection on a monthly basis. Consider becoming a global connector. Help us help them with the gospel of Jesus Christ. For just $25 a month, you can join us in expanding the borders of these teachings. And when you become a global connector, you'll also receive a free monthly resource. This month, you'll hear a message about outreach from Doug Keene, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Hastings, in England. So, will you make a move and make a difference? Sign up to be a global connector today by calling 1-800-922-1888. You can send your monthly donation by mail when you write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199. Or we can automatically charge your credit card each month. Just call 1-800-922-1888 and become a global connector with your monthly $25 donation. You can also sign up online at connectionradio.org. $25 a month can mean a huge difference for someone who's never heard the gospel. Join Global Connectors and we'll keep you updated on our progress. Call today, 1-800-922-1888.
And also, don't forget you can order a copy of today's message for just $6, including shipping, when you call 1-800-922-1888. We like to make copies of these studies available so you can review them again or share them with someone you know. So call today to get your copy on CD at 1-800-922-1888 or visit connectionradio.org. We also have more resources from our series, The Bible from 30,000 Feet, available at BibleFrom30K.org. So be sure to check out what's available there to help you get even more out of our current series. And if you have the time, we always enjoy receiving letters from you. So if you get a chance, write us at P.O. Box 95707, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87199.
And make the connection at the foot of the cross. And study the Word of God and find the way into His love. Make the connection. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Make the connection.
We'll continue with the adventures of Esther and how God used her to change the course of a nation next time, so don't miss out. The Connection is a presentation of Connection Communications, connecting you to God's never-changing truth in ever-changing times.